host Chris Lukianenko, and I scour this big brand land of ours, looking under fermenters and behind mash tuns to find the best beer stories to share with you. The Beer Healer Interviews is now available on all major podcast services. If you like the show and want to help out, can I ask you to simply rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or your preferred podcast service? Just leave a few words and a rating and the podcast gods will do the rest. By doing this, you'll help others to discover the show more easily and hopefully get more people interested in this great industry that we call craft beer. Dear listeners of the show, I'm in pain today. Last night I had my work Christmas party, open bar at a winery, followed by an open bar at Preacher's, one of the greatest craft beer bars down here in Hobart. So I'm tired, emotional and hungover. Yesterday, I also strained my gluteal in a stupid game of that Finnish fucking log-tossing thing called Finska. Some might say I busted my sphincter playing Finska, but it's more of a gluteal strain, I've got to tell you. And I'm pretty sure I almost died in a plane yesterday, and it fucking scared the shit out of me in a little seaplane taking off from Hobart. So, as I said, I'm a bit tired and emotional. I probably should be sitting on an arse donut right now to relieve the pain that I'm in. But I choose to stand to record this, and I have a glass of water to drink. No beers for me. That's how much I love everybody that listens to this podcast. I'm putting myself through pain for the good of the listeners. And what I need right now is support from my two mates on this podcast, the pro Dave Padden from Akasha and the protege Ben Miller from Ben. Guys, am I going to get any sympathy from you?
No, how can we have sympathy for someone who complains about having a rough ride in their private seaplane?
Nah, bullshit. It was. So let me tell you what happened. So we had this work Christmas dinner, and we were going up into the Derwent Valley. So about a 30-minute seaplane flight out of Hobart. We get in the plane. It's a little bit windy. It's choppy on the Derwent. We got white caps. The pilot goes, mate, or guys and girls, it's going to be a little bit of a bumpy takeoff. We're like, yeah, no worries, okay. I'm not a great flight. I've flown a lot in my life, but always in big-ass planes. I've had a couple of helicopters, a couple of small-plane flights, and I never feel quite as safe in those. So we're taking off and we're climbing. You know, it's okay. It's really nice out the window. I've seen all this cool scenery of around home and having a laugh. Everybody's taking photos. And then we get up past Mona, so we're probably about 10 minutes into the flight, and all of a sudden, out of fucking nowhere, I kid you not, I reckon we've dropped, I'm going to say 3, 4, 5 meters. I don't really know exactly what it was. All I know was all five of us, six of us in the plane, all smashed our fucking heads on the roof of the plane. And then me and my mate that I sit next to who owns the company, we've come back down onto this seat. Now, these seaplanes, they're old. It's old technology. I'm going to say it's like from the 60s or something. So the seat's like a bench seat that you prop up. So you lift it up, you know, pull out the leg and prop it back down. So as we've gone up, we've obviously collected the seat, and the bit that's holding the seat up has then fallen back to the floor. So we've not only hit our heads on the roof of the plane, we've then come all the way back down to the ground. Might have been something to do with how I did my fucking ass muscle, and smashed down on the ground. And the pilot even said, oh, Jesus, I didn't see that one coming. We've hit some kind of air pocket or whatever. You know, he was very apologetic. He's turned around to me and my mate Pete on the back seat. Are you guys okay? We've given him a thumbs up. Yeah, we're all right. Keep going.
I don't know if it's going to make you feel any better, but, you know, whether you crash in a big plane or a small plane, either way, you're fucked.
Now, I know this. I know. So we spent the rest of the flight sitting on the floor of the plane because we were too scared to try and get up and fix the seat. So, you know, the window when I first started was sort of at, I don't know, about mid chest sort of height kind of thing. So I got a beautiful view. For the next 15 minutes of the flight, all I wanted to do was get off that fucking thing, and all I could see was the tops of the heels because literally my eyes were the bottom of the window. Fucking shit.
Oh, you fucking idiot.
See? How have you guys been?
Oh, there's nothing to say. I mean, the show's now finished. That's it.
We're done.
That was our hour with Beer Healer whinging about his nice corporate Christmas parties.
Well, I figure I'm allowed to have a bit of a whinge because you guys are now nearly 40 minutes late from when we meant to start this fucking recording. So
we're actually far later than our original time, which was 5:30.
Yeah. It's now,
anyway.
You have to listen. Anyway, let's put all that.
Are you all right, mate? Are you all right?
I'm okay now. I'll be. Thanks for your concern. Let's get underway because this is our Christmas show, last one for the year, and it's where the listeners get to ask you clowns a couple of questions about beer, brewing, and shower beers. What do you reckon?
There's going to be shower beer questions, is there?
I don't know. There might be. There might not be. Oh, who knows?
Yeah, we'll see, won't we?
We actually had a really great response to the asking of the questions, and I've got to, Ben, this pains me, mate. I've got to acknowledge that this was Dave's great idea, and he also ponied up for all the prizes. So, Dave, thanks very much for doing this, mate. It's great.
Mate, it is my pleasure. I think all three of us will agree that it's been a hell of a blast this year, and we just wanted to say a little bit of a thank you to all these listeners. So it's, we've been truly blown away. It's the responses we've got both, you know, through your show and personally has been pretty amazing. So a bit of a thank you to all of our all those people out there.
Yeah, they do love it. These episodes are nearly the most popular. Okay, they are the most popular of the ones that we do. For some reason, you guys seem to draw a crowd. I don't know why. I go through and do all these other ones on my own and I bring you clowns on and all of a sudden we've hit the ratings bonanza.
Oh, it's just a slick banter that goes with it, mate.
It is pretty slick. Now, you blokes are both in the one room tonight. Luckily enough for you, you've been able to get out of the COVID thing and have a beer and pizza.
Holding hands and maybe nude as well.
I've cleared off the king bed, mate. We've got the microphone between us and we're having a good old snuggle and a beer. We actually just had some pizza as well, but it's quite hard. I'm still picking cheese out of Dave's chest hairs.
You idiot. Now, I'll say from the outset, we're going to record for about an hour tonight, and whatever questions we don't get through, we'll do a second episode on the other side of Christmas because there are a lot of questions to get through here tonight. But everybody who's sent in a question is in the draw for all the prizes that we got. If I quickly go back through them, best overall question gets the ultimate Akasha prize pack with a mixed case of Akasha beers, tote bag, T-shirt, hat, and a beer. Koozie, is that what you call those? I'd call it stubby holder, but anyway.
Stubby
can holder.
No stubby going in that, mate.
A koozie. Well,
can it not be like a can holder?
Can
cooler? Cozzy, is that what you call it?
Hand warmer in the winter.
Funniest question, mixed four-pack and an Akasha T-shirt. Best technical question, a mixed four-pack. And then everybody goes in the draw to win the social media lucky door prize, which I have already drawn, and I will let you know about that one at the end of the show.
Can I just say that? We have no idea what these questions are, and I'm real nervous technical ones because it's just going to reveal that Dave and I are just massive hoaxes. We don't actually.
Well, I thought that would be the best thing. If I have to put you on the spot, then we know if you're really any good or not.
Yeah, I can't Google these questions. So
you can't Google. No. No, there's actually some really good questions in here tonight. There's some rippers. So what about we get into it?
Let's do it.
Sounds good.
I'll let you guys choose the first topic. I've got hops, recipes, process, brew types. What do you want to go with? It's like being on a game show.
Why don't we start at the start with recipe?
With recipe. All right. Where's my fucking – all right. Well, I don't know. This is a great one. This is great because this is a bit of a loaded question.
All right.
Hades Sam.
Oh, fucking hell.
You know him, do you?
Yeah, I do, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, hey, righto.
You want a cuss? He's a key
now, one. Oh, is he okay? Yeah, now that restrictions are easing up in the nation, do you see collab brewing taking off again? To what level? E.g., not just brewery to brewery, but a wide range, like, you know, bars, podcasts, beekeepers, he said, with meads and braggots even, fruit suppliers and services. Heck, would you three get behind brewing a beer healer beer?
Well, we tried to get you up here, but you're too tight to buy a plane ticket.
I couldn't get there because of some fucking restrictions, but I'll be there at some stage.
We won't get into the details. Mostly it was just you were too tight, but yes.
Actually, this has been asked by two people too because Joel Hamilton Foster also asked the same. When are we going to see the Pro Protege and the Hack collaboration beer? And he reckons it needs to be hoppy for Akasha, hazy for Ben, and has the familiar taste of 150 lashes for the beer healer.
I love it. I love it. That actually sounds like a hit. Can you write those things down? We'll do that in the new year. But I think, look, for collabs in general, I think certainly I think Ben shares the same thoughts as me, is I think we don't do too many of them, and when we do them, we want to make sure that they're special. And so, you know, with like-minded people, whether that's other breweries, whether that is, we've done quite a few over the years with bars that we've worked with for many years. I think it's really important that there is a relationship there, and it's not a collab done over email. It's a collab, and people turn up. And I think I've said on one of the shows earlier this year that, you know, we've done a few, but we did one with the guys over in the States, and the
River.
Yeah, or River. It's so good, I've always forgotten their name. But Ben was also involved in that over there. But it was we were talking for probably almost a year, and we want to brew a beer together. But we both said we don't want to do that unless those guys can actually be in our brewery brewing the beer with us. So it took quite a while for it to happen. When it happened, we brewed a wonderful beer, and we sent it over there, and we went over to the States and helped it launch it there as well. And it was a real big deal. And I think that's really important with a collab.
Yeah, I agree. Oh, there's been a fair bit of sort of collaboration over email of recent times, which is, you know, you got to do what you got to do when you can't leave your hometown or whatever. But I think in a perfect world, getting to each other's breweries to actually physically work on the beer together is the ultimate, isn't it?
Yeah.
I you know, it's funny, is Dave and I have never even done a collab, ever.
Really?
I don't think we've even brewed a
You brew every one of your beers at his brewery, isn't that count?
Nah, not really. Oh. I don't give him credit for my fucking work, mate. I think it's quite cool through COVID seeing the way collaborations have, you know, like you say, you just kind of adjust to the shit situation everyone's in. And sure, doing an email collab is not quite the same. I mean, I personally wouldn't want to do a collab unless I was at the brew house. It's just the way I am. I just like to see things done, you know, like the Barossa Valley Brewing one I did, I flew down for the day for that, you know what I mean? And stuff like that. Ideally it needs to be a hands-on thing for it to be a true collab, and it's sort of the experience of it as well, you know?
Rate, review and subscribe. Three words that strike a chord in every sensitive 44-year-old podcaster who dreams of telling stories of craft beer. And something that I talk about a lot, but it really can get this little potty into more ears and therefore grow craft beer for all of us to enjoy. So even if you listen elsewhere, if you've got an iPhone, you've got Apple Podcasts, and therefore you can help out the show. Those three words, rate, review and subscribe. This next one I'm going to throw over to is sort of about process. This is a really good one for you, actually, Ben. So this is from Bevan Griffin, or Giffen, actually it is. He says, for someone who might be considering going down the gypsy brewing route, can you guys tell us what licenses and or permits and approximate costing for putting a first brew out in cans?
Wow. That's
a big one, isn't it?
That's an episode worth question, that one. from a gypsy perspective, they don't really need any licenses at all, because you're using the license of the brewer that you're brewing at. So,
yep.
Or do you have? No, you do got one license. You have a liquor license?
No, the way we do it. See, I do it a bit differently. We do it whereas Dave pretty much sells all my beer for me. I physically sell it,
right?
But yeah. Dave actually sells it.
So that's sort of like one extreme, but that's pretty rare. I mean, most brewers wouldn't do that. So I think so the gypsy brewer would need a liquor license to be able to sell the beer. But they obviously don't need a production license. They don't need an excise license because that's paid by the brewery, and they don't need a producer's license because, again, the brewery is there producing it for them. So yep. They do need a liquor license to sell the beer, and that's about it.
Yeah. So, like, if I was to start going to markets or something like that, or selling my beer privately myself, then yes, I would need a liquor license, wholesaler license. Pretty sure it is wholesale producers, something like that.
Yeah.
The reason why I never have got around to doing it is, one, because I'm lucky enough to have opportunities like knowing people like Dave and the Rusty Penny guys who have helped me out. But also because you have to attach your license to a premise, and I previously didn't own a house until now, yay me. But, you know, now I've got this, now I actually have a permanent residence that I'm going to, that I can attach a license to. And it's, to me, that's far, like, because if you change addresses, it can be a bit of a pain in the ass. So
yeah, moving. Yeah. Moving on is a little bit easier these days. But I think when I started Akasha, you know, close to 6 years ago, whilst we were looking for our premises, and whilst we were building the premises, we were essentially a gypsy brewer with rocks. And so I had a liquor license that was attached to the study at home. So when you literally submit to council a floor plan. I was just trying to remember. It wasn't like a DA or anything like that, but it was like a use of the premises because you need to be able to, the license itself needs to be attached to something. So I think it was just a letter from council saying that it was approved that you could actually run a business from your home. And you would do that with any home business. You would need some sort of something. And as long as you're not, you don't have people coming to the house to buy it, you weren't allowed to do that. As long as you didn't have any contractors or anyone coming to the house at all, it was a true home business. You could license a particular room, and essentially you're licensing where the computer is, because that's what you're doing. Your license actually says that you're selling from home, and you're using your computer and the internet to sell beer. Essentially, that's what it says.
Yep.
And then when we got our new premises, we did a transfer of the liquor license over to the brewery.
And what about, like, on the second part of that question about putting a beer out in cans is a very difficult one, because it depends on, artwork costs, cost of the materials that you use in the cans, cost of the goods in the beer, whether you do a 3% beer versus a 10% beer, all that sort of stuff. But in general terms, what would you put, like, let's say, a per can price on a beer that you might put out? What, in general terms, is it going to cost them like a dollar to produce that, or is it going to cost them four?
So many variables. It's really hard, and it really comes down to you. It'd be remiss of me or Ben to give you a number, because it's just going to lead you down a garden path. A contract brewer will happily tell you what that is, depending on, like you said, depends on the beer sales, so the ingredients. It depends on the alcohol content for tax and other things, whether your supply, whether who's designing your labels, where you're getting the labels printed. If you get the labels printed as opposed to the actual brewer, they're going to be a hell of a lot more expensive because you don't have the volume there. There's so many different, the cases, the labels for the cases, there's just so many different variables.
I would say Bevan should go back and listen to a couple of the episodes with the Gypsy Brewers I've spoken to this year, and maybe reach out to some of those guys. Like, it was, I think I had Shapeshifter, and
there's not going to be a lot left. There's not going to be a lot of margin left at the end of the day. Yeah. So if if you're selling a case of beer for $90 plus GST wholesale, it might cost you between $60 and $70 for that case to get produced. If all the brew costs involved.
And the other thing as well is, like, my canning, for instance, the first time we canned tin of pie, that was East Coast Canning who did that. And then the second time around I did a batch was Dave using his own canning line. So, prices were greatly, that changes it completely again. Mm. So it's just such a,
I think it's important to, when you do go to a brewery who provides contract services, and you say, oh, look, I want to brew a beer, and they'll say that, well, that'll cost, it might only be, I'm pulling a number out of the air, it might be $30 a case, and it's like, oh, that's pretty good. But when you add in the true cost of all the materials and everything else has to go with it, including the excise, you're really up there around, probably at least 80% to 90% of what you're going to be selling for wholesale.
Fair enough.
I think, as a general rule for me, I think I'm lucky to probably get 10% of the total.
Mm. If you're lucky.
And that's the total cost. Yeah, if I'm lucky, to get 10% of the total of what an entire batch of beer will make. So it's very,
Which gets, eaten up by all of your other hobbies.
Now, next question comes from Stefan the Brisket Guy.
Ah, Stefan, the best barbecue in Australia.
He says, Dave, why do you like Mango White Claw so much?
Mango White Claw. So, look, there's a little bit of a story.
Did you have to kick him out of my house?
There's a little bit of a story. As a brewery, we've made a decision. We always look at the market, what's going on. Always out there tasting, other beers that are out in the market, other drinks that are in the market. And we did have a little bit of a seltzer tasting session in the afternoon. I don't even know if you know this story, Ben.
No, I didn't.
Had a bit of a seltzer tasting session. Now, I didn't think I was a huge fan of seltzer, but they are terribly easy to drink.
Fuck, they're good.
They are.
And, they're only, 4 or 5%, but, it's like drinking water with a little bit of flavour in it, which is exactly what it is, right? And I may have had a few seltzers that afternoon, and Stefan, the brisket guy, who owns a wonderful company called Brisket and Brawn, who is often serving barbecue at the brewery, was serving barbecue in the brewery that afternoon and witnessed something that I would said I would never, ever, ever do, and I shotgunned a seltzer out the front of the brewery. I was a little bit under the weather at that point. It was recorded by my staff and has been used against me already.
Well, that goes on beautifully to the next question, which is Andre Sammartino. He says, seltzer, the path to brewing fame and fortune, or lolly water that no self-respecting brewer should let in their fermenter? What do you reckon?
That's funny because I'm pretty sure you can record a phone conversation a month ago with Dave and I going, I just don't fucking get it. I just don't get it. If you want a soda, go get a fucking vodka soda. But geez, you know, I've already got half the shit lined up at home to brew some for my wife because she loves them. Absolutely. And you know what? I have to admit they're pretty fucking good too. And
what? What did you just say?
Same thing you just said. I'm not on shotgunning them yet. Yeah. But see, if I was going to do seltzers, one, I would never want them to be looking like water because I'd be using real fruit in them so they would be bright red and whatever color I'm using because I think that's just part of the fun of it. But two, like, I don't know, I tried a few in Hawaii and I actually think the ones I've had here have been better than the ones I've had in America as far as like the local ones go. Like the guys at the Australian Brewery, Dan down there, he makes a really, like, actually really, really nice ones. He's completely natural flavorings. And I haven't tried the Rusty Penny guys ones yet, but I believe they're decent. And I don't know. I just think there's definitely that aspect of it that no self-respecting brewer would brew it. But, you know, man, if you can do something that's current to keep people coming through your door, well, you're a bit silly not to, you know what I mean? Whether or not you have a massive passion for doing it or you really enjoy brewing it or you're just there to please a broader broader market. But it's like anything, you know, like, you know, you walk into a brewery and I've had a few, you know, I don't know if that's well said everywhere, but, you know, you ask for a lager and they're like, no, because that's a brewer's beer. It only brewers order lagers because there's a place for everything.
But this is how I kind of see it. At the end of the day, you guys and girls that own these breweries are running a business. And whether it be to make a seltzer or to brew an entry-level beer or to create something that might align with furfew or want to take people away from Carlton Draft or they're just business decisions that you feel as a business owner you need to make sure that you keep the fucking lights on. Because at the end of the day, you don't want to be having to shut your business down because you made a bet, whether it be seltzer or whatever. You don't want to make a decision in your business that was going to ultimately lead to its downfall. So if this is something that might help you keep your head above water for a while you're, I don't know, maybe your double IPA is, you know, working away in barrels or whatever the hell may be, where the stuff you really love is brewing away in the background. This helps keep the lights on for a bit longer. I reckon it's a pretty good idea.
I agree with you. I think there's some of my best mates, great brewers, brewing them, doing them really well. And they do have a little bit of passion for it. They, you know, it's hard. It's a bit like brewing a lager. It is actually really difficult to brew.
There's a lot to
a good seltzer that is what it is. So look, I think it's great. It's not. It's at this point in time, it's not for me. I don't mind drinking one every now and then. But yeah, do I want to brew one right now? No, not really of interest. And in fact, we put it to our entire team. Does anyone interested? And it's like, no, we're pretty cool for now. We're busy enough doing what we do and we'll see how it goes. And, you know, if it becomes something that my market wants or our bar wants or whatever, then we've got the ability to serve somebody else's seltzer as well. So no difference to serving somebody else's wine or spirits that we do in our bar at the moment. So,
I'll start walking in demanding a Kasha seltzer.
Go on. Alka-Seltzer.
I tell you, on the bus ride to and from the winery yesterday, the seltzers were going off.
Just land the plane in the vineyard? Would you see you've gone planes, buses? Where was the limit?
The rest of the team all caught the bus up and back. So I prepared to
only the top guys got the plane.
Yeah, it was like a thank you for some work that we did. So
the
it was like
on the bus would have slipped the pilot a 50 to make.
Yeah,
there were jokes about that. Yeah, there were definitely jokes.
Here's one. Yeah. Go for it.
I filled two eskies full of great beers and some seltzers as well. And this morning when I unpacked the Eskies, there's a lot of beer going back into the work bar fridge and not a lot of seltzer. So it was interesting.
Well, we've got our Christmas, the Akasha Christmas party tomorrow, and we will have a keg of seltzer. What?
Invite must have got lost in the mail to that one.
Yeah.
You're not actually an employer, dickhead.
It was everybody who was going said, can you please make sure Ben's not coming?
That's fair.
What have you got, a keg of seltzer?
We've got a keg and a case of seltzer. As much as we don't want to brew it, we certainly want to drink a few.
Fair enough. Yeah. Maybe with the new branding, seltzer nicely aligns to the new branding, and that leads me to my next question. Luke Cooper has asked, how have you found the response to your rebranding in the craft community, and how's the consumer feedback been?
I'm gonna take an element of that question and the bit that says how do we find the feedback from the craft community. And I think the feedback from the general community has been amazing. The feedback from the hardcore craft community has not been all rosy. I think people, it's almost like some of our fans, and we don't want this to happen, but they are almost offended by it. You know, people who really buy into your brand initially, and when you change that, you know, some people just don't like that, and we understand that, and we're sorry for that. But yeah, the hardcore craft community, there was a little bit of pushback. We don't get that anymore. I think it's certainly, we've got it across the line. Sales are booming. We're getting lots of great feedback, and we're getting plenty of new customers coming to the fore and saying, you know, we love the look. Let's have a look at the beer, and that's why we did it.
Yeah. Look, at the end of the day, people don't like change that much.
That's what I say.
You could have done anything. You still would have had people saying, I love it or I hate it.
Hmm. And 98% of people loved it, and that's a pretty good result. It's a very good result.
And as you say, mate, the tills are still turning over, so that's the best result of all.
Yeah, you know what? It's too fucking busy because I haven't been able to brew there at all.
The only way we could get one in is brew on one on Christmas Eve. So.
All right, let's go with one from Tim Shackle around process. He says, "Dear boys, I'm a long-time brewer, but sometimes I best associate with the hack because I'm kind of cool.
I was going to say because you're awesome.
Yeah. I always keg, which has produced some awesome results, but I've never been truly happy with the beers that I've bottled. Even if it's the same beer in the keg, I've never been able to replicate the taste and carbonation. It's always been a little bit off. Any tips to bottling that I've missed? I use carb drops and new bottles every time. Maybe it's best to refine my counter-pressure keg filling skills."
Yes, definitely. Counter pressure filling has been always the way that I've had best results. However, you still are going to have the bottle to keg is still going to be a little bit different. Beer goes through packaging shock. It changes it always a little bit. I don't personally bottle condition any beers unless I know they're a beer that's going to benefit from it, i.e. like a wild ale or a Saison or maybe I've got a couple of Belgian quads in bottle at the moment that has come out that, you know, I've got a whole barrel full of a quad that I'm planning on bottle conditioning the whole lot of it because Belgian quads, I think, it helps them with that development, and also having some, you know, decent bubbles in a quad isn't a bad thing. But hoppy beers never ever do it because I've always been against it. I was one of the earliest things I did. I think I might have bottled maybe three batches of beer and then went out and bought a keg set up because I could just, it's just not right. Like, some beers are good for it, but anything hoppy or with a lot of flavor or with fruit or adjuncts, anything like that, it's just going through that re-fermentation in the bottle just doesn't do it favors. So, yeah, you definitely better go get a counter-pressure filler for sure.
But I think one of the things that you'll always find is that over time, the bottle, whether it's counter-pressure, well, let's talk about counter-pressure, will always degrade quicker than a keg because of the added oxygen, essentially.
Extra.
There is no way you can add zero oxygen, even at a professional level, into the can or a bottle. And over time, you'll find that it will degrade quicker. Hopefully a lot slower and it's all drunk by then, but you're always adding a level of oxygen, which is the main enemy of packaged beer. when you're moving from a big ass vessel into a very, very small one. So, what are you laughing at?
Oh, big ass vessel, no?
Well, I said big ass and he farted at the same time. Right. He's pretty happy with himself.
Yeah. I'm classy tonight.
I'm glad you cannot smell what I can smell right now.
I was trying not to laugh because I was like, I could feel it coming on. I was like, oh, shit. He's having a serious conversation.
A laugh fart.
A laugh fart, yeah.
Laugh fart.
He's right. Oxygen is, but for sure. For bottling at home, if you want the beers to laugh, just leave them in the keg.
Yeah, and look, I was never happy, and I was brewing 98% hoppy beers as a home brewer as well, and never happy with the result back in many moons ago. If you get a counter pressure fill into a bottle, usually I would say one, make sure you've got a good counter pressure fill. Like any equipment, don't buy a cheap one or just add oxygen. But two is just do it on demand. Have a keg there. If you're going to someone's place that you want to take some bottles, do it on the spot before you go. And that way you'll find that it's as fresh as what's in the keg.
I guess the other thing is that a lot of people want to keg to free up, want a bottle to free up keg space.
Right.
But, if you're going to do that, you don't want to go to the extent of...
Get a bigger fridge.
Yeah, get a bigger fridge. It's quite as simple as that. I actually managed to score an old glass door fridge off Dave that wasn't working, but... just changed the temperature controller in it and started working.
So. Yeah, I wanted the fucking thing back. I thought it was dead.
They were wheeling it out to throw it out, and I was like, fuck off, I'll take that home. If it's buggered, I'll throw it out. It was just a $10 STC 1000 off eBay, mate. $1,500 fridge.
You'd think a decent bloke could fix it and bring it back, wouldn't you?
No. Yeah, you would, wouldn't you? No. It's not like you've done much for him, though, Dave, really.
That fridge is, I used to use it a lot for sort of – fermenting because it used to fit a whole fermenter in it, but now I've got the glycol. It's just good for keg storage. But not saying you have to go out and do that, but you just have to be wary of if you want to free up keg space, that's understandable. But if you go and bottle a hoppy beer or counter pressure fill something and then leave it out of the fridge or whatever, your beer is not going to last, naturally.
Yeah. Just one more thing. I remember as a home brewer, and I'm pretty sure they're still available, I used to use a Blickman beer gun. It's a really, really simple piece of equipment. It's not even counter pressure, but it's just a really well-designed, simple piece of equipment that flushes. Essentially, the most important part of filling a bottle is flushing it first, and that does that really well. So a Blickman beer gun will set you back $100, $150, I can't remember. Don't get the copies. Get the proper ones.
I've got a Kegland one. Works a treat.
Okay. Get the copies.
I fill my copies. I fill my cans up. That's what I used to fill my cans up at this point in time. But we actually bought a two-head filler, so.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah.
Look at you go.
Well, have you got a 12
filler? Oh, come on. It's only 10, mate.
Next question. Russell Paulin says, what brand of pen does Ben like to tap, open, close and fiddle with on almost every fucking podcast?
Classic question. I'm sitting at his desk now. Why don't we open up the drawer?
That's Janice's desk.
You wouldn't have a desk, would you? What do you need a fucking desk for?
Yeah, what I
need
is we're trying to come over
here. Well, I'm not going to open the drawers of this desk
now. No, don't do that.
No, fair enough.
So it's funny that you say that because as you asked that question, I was clicking my fingers. But mate? I wouldn't have a clue. Probably just a book.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
What sort of a book?
A book.
What's a book?
A book. It's out in his garage.
It's a book pen.
Book pen from me garage.
A book pen.
Yeah.
Luke Abila. Anyway. He says, do you think beer is starting to lose its soul? Many IPAs and hazy beers closely resemble fruit juices or ciders these days, and simple flavors are being lost. I know experimentation is fun, but have we gone too far?
West Coast or die.
I've said this in a couple of our other episodes. I think hazies are going too far now. I can't drink half of them.
Yeah, I'm actually turning. I'm going back to the West Coast wherever I can.
I've been talking to my contact in America about getting some East Coast hazy sent over to me because it's gone too far. Never would I thought I had a fridge full of hazies and I barely touch them because they're just too sweet. I just can't do it.
Well, we went to his fridge literally 5 minutes before we jumped on to do the call, and there was a whole lot of hazies sitting there. We won't name names, but they were sitting there on the shelf there. and we went for a couple of lagers sitting at the bottom of the fridge.
Yeah.
And I literally about 5 seconds ago pointed. I won't name which lager it is either, but I pointed at it and gave the thumbs up. I was like, "This is fucking good. It's hot, right? It's a hot summer day. We're out, a fair way out in the country. It's pretty warm. This is the perfect beer right now.
Fair way out in the country.
Oh, it's fucking miles out."
I am with you. I like going back to the simpler flavours myself too. I've been drinking a fair few lagers of late, and just I've had a few neepers, and I've just like got halfway through, and I was like, I'm just really not enjoying this taste combination anymore. And
hazies are a funny beast, and it's something that we like doing. It's certainly not our focus. But we spend a lot, and we've spoken about this on the podcast before, like where West Coast went 10 years ago, it just went too bitter.
Too bitter, yeah. Yep. The opposite.
But now West Coast has backed off. It's allowing the flavours of the hops to come through. The alcohol's dropping slightly. We're getting really, really nice, approachable West Coast. I think maybe the hazies in the East Coast have just gone a little bit too far, and I think the way we're bringing is we're trying to just bring them back a bit and sit them kind of halfway between where they are now and where a West Coast is. Add a little bit of bitter. You do the same, Ben. Add a little bit of bittering hops just to get some, a little bit less mouthfeel. No, if it's too big a mouthfeel, it's not drinkable. It doesn't pass the two schooners.
It's not even mouthful these days now. It's just this cloying sweetness. Like, I honestly drank one the other day and it gave me this nostalgic feeling of being a kid and eating too many lollies and needing a drink of water. Like, it was just, I honestly haven't, it was just too. I'll never brew my hazies that way. I like them to be, anyone who's ever drunk mine, that I like them to still be a beer, but still really have that great, really expressional nose on them and packed full of fruit without this horrid thick sweetness to them, which is the way they're going now. My last hazy PPZ wasn't as hazy as what I would have liked it to be, but the flavour was there, and that's how I wanted it to be. It was still bitter. It was still, you still knew you were drinking an IPA, sometimes now I tend to agree with what he said in a little bit, that some of them have definitely gone too far in the sense that they're just too sweet, but that's not to say it's always going to be like that. Like Dave said, West Coast, I had a West Coast last night that I was like, Jesus Christ, this is like drinking a West Coast from 5 years ago.
It strips the enamel off.
I was like out in the backyard coughing up a furball like a cat. My wife's looking if I'm all right, and I'm like, it's definitely a good, it's a lot of people would probably get pretty fired up by, a question like that, but it's just, I agree. I don't think I'll ever brew my beers like that. I'm not going to be putting 10%, 20% lactose into a beer.
Just having said that, though, these guys, the people, those beers that are like that, they are selling, though, aren't they?
They've got a market.
People went crazy IBUs too.
Mm.
Actually, that's come back. Who released that beer? Can I Has IBU? The cat on the front of it.
I'm not sure.
Do you know who that was?
No, I know the one you're talking about, but I can't remember for the life of me. So next question, which is Dylan Porter, who had a similar question to Luke, but he's asking next bit of the question was, what do you think is going to be the next big thing in craft beer? What the fuck happened then?
Sorry, it's all falling apart here.
Mayday!
Sorry, the question was the next big thing in craft beer?
I dropped the beer!
Yeah. Yep.
Right. Oh, look, and it's, we can all speculate as to what that is, and if we all knew, we'd be the, we'd be doing it now and waiting to rake in the millions, right? I think we kind of started to answer that question in the last question, right?
COVID-19 infused bitter ale.
But I think things go in cycles, right? There is going to be another thing that's going to go hard and probably go a little bit extreme, and that's just the way things work, not just in beer, but in all sorts of things, in food as well. So I think we'll see a bit of a softening, and maybe this is just hoping, but a bit of softening of some of the extremes that we're looking at the moment that we're talking about just before. I see a I just want, I think, you know, we're starting to see the states now, obviously, just an IPA is an IPA. They don't call it hazy. They don't call it East Coast. I think we're brewing our IPAs at the moment is, yeah, we have our good, you know, true West Coast, and that's what we do and what we're known for. But we're starting to brew these beers that kind of just sit halfway in between. And it's just an IPA. It's a little bit hazy. It's a little bit softer on the bitterness. But still got some bitterness there. It's still got plenty of flavour, and it's just a fucking good beer.
Yeah.
That's where I hope the IPA will just settle into its groove again. Other styles, who knows? I don't care.
Ben, what do you reckon?
I tend to agree, mate. It's like, you know, again, that's why I've never called mine. Mine have always just been a hazy IPA rather than a New England IPA, or in my earlier days they were a New England IPA but they've always, you know.
When it was cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the seltzers, obviously.
Yeah, I don't think they're going anywhere.
I'd love to see, like, a return of a lot of really nice farmhouse beers, like good saisons, always, you know, a lot of breweries doing them. I love them. I was actually just thinking the other day that I think one of the first beers I'll brew in my new brewery at home will be a nice, like a traditional saison, like a 2.5% one. Lots of funk. I might even Brett ferment it, just because I used to do them all the time. I used to always, every summer coming up early in the year, I'd brew a saison, and I would, I'd let it age on Brett. I'd co-ferment it with Brett until about November, and then keg it and drink it over summer. You know, I just loved it, and I miss those sort of beers. I want to see more of them. Nuts, but it would just be nice to see a return.
Yeah. I want to start a session beer revolution where everybody gets on the mid strengths and they're just amazing craft beers.
You know, I'm a big advocate of that as well. That's, you know, I
shut that fucking dog up.
Dave's just fucking farted.
Jesus. Let's move on to the next question then from Chris Newman. And this is for Dave Fart Pants Padden. Said, after listening to the Awesome Beer Healers recent podcast with Will Tatchell of Van Diemen Brewing, it's occurred to me how similar you guys sound. Maybe it's just the level-headed, Maybe it's just the level-headed, knowledgeable tone that you both permeate, or perhaps it's the down-to-earth Aussie accent. But are you guys related in any way? Maybe long-lost half-brothers, or have you ever both been spotted in the same room at the same time? But on a serious note, does Akasha ever plan on blending their hop-driven ethos with the experimental side of mixed and spontaneous fermentation? Maybe you can do it with your half brother, Will.
Oh, jeez.
Long question, Jesus.
There is so much to unpack from that, mate. What's going on?
Well, me, no, you're not brothers.
No, we're definitely not brothers. We don't look alike.
No.
I'm much better looking than Taj.
He looks after his body a bit more than you.
Oh, yeah. 240 kilo photo I said earlier.
Judging by the photos that Mr. Miller was posting around it.
That's our new promo photo.
Oh, Jesus. I'll tell you what,
holy
mate.
Holy shit.
It'd be nice because you haven't really done me any favours on any of the promo photos, have you?
Come on, the last one was all right.
You act like a dickhead. They get out there. I'm only collecting from the public space these photos of you. I haven't taken them myself.
You will have a never-ending bevy of fucking photos if you take that out. Let me tell you. Good mate of mine brewing, you know, very, very different styles of beer that I'm doing, although he does some great IPAs as well. Will I ever go down that path? It's not really anything. I mean, it interests me. I love farmhouse. I love sours. I love all those styles of beer. Is it something I want to get into? Yes, it is. Is it something in the current brewery setup we have? No, it isn't. So
you don't really have farmland in five. No,
certainly not growing my own beers. I don't think I'd have the patience for that. But you know, as we look into the future of our expansions and all that sort of thing, we are starting to throw around the ideas of, you know, we wouldn't do Brett Ferments, for instance, in our current brewery.
You
can borrow yours, but it might be something if we had another premises, dedicated to that we would think about. But not saying we would do it, but these are the sorts of ideas. We're certainly going to keep going down the path we're on now. It's, we've grown to a size that's blown all our expectations out of the water. And we believe that's because we concentrate on what we do, as does Will. And do it well. So it can't be everything. Can't do everything. We can drink and appreciate sour beers. We can drink and appreciate seltzer. We can drink and appreciate, you know, saisons. but it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to brew them.
No, that's a good answer, I reckon. Good answer. This one might come to you, I reckon, Ben. Joel Slade has asked, hop freshness is super important to make good beer. As a home brewer, it's quite difficult to actually determine how fresh the hops are you are buying until you get them home. But also, there's no control over how they are stored previously. How do professional brewers maintain quality control in this regard?
Yeah.
That's another big question.
Well, I mean, when you're brewing professionally, you're opening 5 kilo bags of hops that haven't been touched since they've been packaged from the hop farm.
Yeah. Mm.
So that's a big one, you know, that you can't even sort of relate that compared to what you can get at a homebrew store or a repackaged store, but hop storage is
this is something I thought a lot about, and I get asked the question a lot. And one of the ways to ensure, as a professional brewer, one of the ways that we ensure the freshness of our hops and we're getting great hops is the relationships we have with either the intermediary that sells us the hops or the farms or the producers themselves. And I think it's no different to a home brewer with their relationship with the owners of the homebrew stores. And I think because what typically they're doing is they're taking the same, they're probably getting their bags from the same producer as us, but they're repackaging into much smaller bags. So is their process good? Is that small bag, you know, being vacuum sealed? I mean, that's the first thing you look at. But other than that, you don't really. I've seen homebrew hops that don't have dates on them. I've seen homebrew hops that, you know, who knows when they were packaged? Who knows where they're from? Who knows where have they been repackaged in the States and come? You really need to get a good enough relationship with your homebrew store or at least your supplier, and mate, ask them the question. How fresh are these hops? Because otherwise you're just not going to know. And then you need to understand what fresh hops smell like. And that's the easiest way to tell if you can't get any information on the hops.
It's like I said, if it smells like cheese, don't brew with it.
That's right. Cheese or onions. But
you've got isovaleric acid there, bury it off.
But so you've just got to understand. And it may be, unfortunately, it's a bit like, we talk about introducing IPA to the market 10 years ago, 15 years ago, people didn't know what a fresh IPA tasted like. And there's a real sort of learning for that. So from the hop perspective, it's really valuable to understand what a good fresh bag of hops smells like. And
we did talk about that a fair bit before, didn't we?
That's what I was saying. I didn't even really know what hop. I thought I knew what hops smelled like, and I actually don't. I didn't at that point until I started professionally brewing, and I was just blown away by it. You know, I could truly say that up until the point that I worked in a commercial brewery, I had absolutely no fucking idea what fresh hops should smell like.
Mm. It's a really, really good question because I've tasted many, many homebrews over the years where I think, you know, this brew's brewed well, hops are shit. Hops are either the malt stale or the hops are stale as well, and there's just no point. It's like if you're cooking a fresh dish of pasta or something, and you use the herbs are old or the cheese is moldy or whatever, it's going to taste like shit, and you can see it a mile off. So it's really important to start with as fresh ingredients as you can. The other thing is if you can buy the bigger you can buy your hops, the bigger container or packet you can buy in, the better. And as long as you're storing it okay as well.
Yeah, I tend to buy mine in sort of, unless I'm getting hops from Dave, obviously, I tend to buy mine in kilo bags if I can.
Mm.
Obviously, the other side of it is that, people aren't going to want to fork out between 40 to 80 bucks for a kilo of hops that they might not use. I tend to do batches at home than what a lot of home brewers would do. So for me to buy a kilo of hops, I can use a kilo of hops in one batch. So quite easily, actually. So if you are okay with spending the money, I'm always sort of, I like to just have a lot of stuff on hand. So if you're okay with buying a kilo, because often if you buy a kilo bag of hops, that's actually going to come direct from Bintani. So that hasn't been repackaged again. So, the hops I buy, I'm pretty sure they're still vacuum sealed from
You can get one kilo bags.
Yeah, you can, yeah.
Yeah, right.
So I think the 1 kilo bags I buy have still got the hop supplier stickers on them.
Yeah.
So Yeah, it's, if you're okay with fronting up the cash, that's always the way to do it. But of course, then comes the issue of freezer space, and you don't want you know 10 different varieties of 1 kilo bag of hops, because then it's all just about balance and finding what's best for you. But really, God, even go down to your local brewery and just ask them.
Can I smell your hops?
Can I smell your hops? Seriously, just see what they like, and it'll blow people away.
Yeah.
Because you can almost smell the hop profile. Like, you know, a lot of older hops just smell like hops. Newer, like recent, fresh hops, you can almost smell the flavor profile without rubbing them. You know what I mean? Straight out of the thing without rubbing them.
There's nothing like opening a bag of hops straight after, you know, when they've just, so obviously we're using predominantly American hops. They've just landed, the recent harvest landed in Australia. We get them up to the brewery, open the bag. Everyone's so fucking excited. It's one of the most exciting times of the year. We all stand around smelling bags of hops, just, you know, wetting ourselves. It's amazing.
First beer's boil goes for at least 2 hours because there's an hour wasted just smelling the bag.
Speaking of hops and your beers, the next question is from Daniel Loose, Footloose Law.
Oh. And,
we're gonna have to pay royalties for that bit of guitar work, I reckon. Jesus.
Oh, don't worry. I don't think you'll be in any trouble.
Anyway, Daniel Footloose Law.
He thought he was playing music on his laptop, and he started freaking out that there's music.
We're going to cross line here. What the fuck's going on?
Anyway, back to Daniel Loose. Footloose. He asks, what is Akasha's favourite hop combination for the Corbin D? Give away his trade secrets to me.
At least try and be fucking shady about it. Jeez. I think there's any secret what's in that. So it's a strong mosaic presence in that beer. And I think I've spoken about Centennial before. Centennial for me is in a good West Coast IPA. We call it the supporting hop. It's not front and center, but for a good hop blend and this is just, you know, the way that I brew and the way that we all brew, it's just you need something that's not going to stand front and center like mosaic, but fill in the gaps and give it, you know, like a supporting role for the hops that are up front. And Centennial is the perfect hop for that. And so we use it a lot as a supporting role, particularly in the boil, not so much in the dry hop, but late in the boil.
I had one of the Corbin D's that you sent me down. So the beer, a couple of months old now, been down at the shack, been in this fridge the whole time, down the shack the other night. It was my last beer of the night. I cracked it and, oh, it was just sensational. I'd forgotten how good that beer was. So, mate, I'm not trying to piss in your pocket here, but geez, it was good.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. We forget. I mean, we don't forget. We love that. I mean, that is our, that's who we are in a can, right? And we get excited because we only brew it 3 times a year, and we do get excited that we're going to brew it, and everyone knows about it, and, you know, everyone comes down and everyone hangs around and the cameras come out, and we, you know, it's they're always a couple of days now because we brew so much that it goes for a couple of days. But it's then when we start opening the bags of Mosaic and Centennial and get it all in the boil, and it just reminds us this is what we do and why we do it. This is it right now.
Yeah, it was a ripper. And that would have been from the last time you brewed it, those cans, because it was in the old can.
That before, yeah. That would be 4 or 5 months old, I guess. So.
Oh, my God. It's been in the fridge the entire time since you sent it down, and it was fresh as for me. Like,
thanks, mate. I appreciate it.
Nice to be able to send him some beers.
I've been sending him heaps.
Yeah, he's been looking after me. He's the new Sterling.
Well, there you go.
Although I do need a new out of office, apparently.
Yeah, you do. Yours is shit. Sterling is magnificent in out of office emails. If you ever email him and he's away, you'll get his Sterling's answer bottle, whatever it is.
I'll order to.
All right.
That's a ripper. Next question from Grant Chilcott, Tassie bloke. What beer would Santa drink? And more importantly, what would Mrs. Claus drink?
She'd drink a seltzer for sure, wouldn't she?
I reckon she would.
That's a bit sexist, though, isn't it?
It was my missus, she'd be drinking a fucking barrel-aged stout, but yeah.
My missus would be drinking bloody House of Arras or something like that.
What the hell's that?
Champagne, you know. It's one of the best sparkling wine in the world. Just this week's out of Tassie. Come on, you lot.
Okay.
I do like a sparkling wine from Tassie. I can't think of any of the names off the top of my head. Ninth Island?
Yeah. Yep.
Is that you?
Yeah, that's from Tassie, yeah.
Okay, the other day?
Devil's Corner, Jance.
Yeah. Oh, Jance is Tassie, is it?
Yeah.
There you go. Yep. You got all the good stuff in here, haven't you? Including this guy. What would Santa Claus drink?
Honestly, I'm just going to say whiskey barrel aged imperial stouts all
around the fire.
Around the fire, mate. That's it.
Nice.
Fucking Christmas. Yeah. Just crack a big fat 650ml bottle and share it with your misso, mate.
Your misso.
I love that. Let's stick with the. Did you say an answer, Dave?
No, I agree with Ben. I think I was thinking more of an Aussie hot summer, but I think you know he's at home in
there. It's always stout weather, mate. It's always stout weather.
Yeah,
it's never too hot for a stout.
Wouldn't you have like an eggnog stout or something like that?
Not really.
No.
was that Little Bang Brewing brewed the eggnog stout? Didn't they?
I think so. Didn't?
Yeah.
Was it one of them had? Yeah, I can't remember.
I think that was them. Let's stick with the Tassie theme for Grant being the Tassie boy. Another Tassie boy, Sam Eastor, who I think's your mate, isn't he, Ben?
Yep, probably. No?
Yep, probably. Okay. Maybe he's not. You don't have mates.
I'll tell you the truth. If it's Sam who I'm thinking of, I actually don't know his last name.
I think that's who it is. Yeah, I'm not sure if his last name either, but I think that's who it is because he's a brewer.
This is our
what was that place down there? He used to brew.
Last Right. Still
yeah, Last Right. Last Right.
Yeah, Dave knows him too.
Yeah, well, I think that's who this is. Yeah. He'll soon tell us if it's not, but he's going to get credit.
If you have a technical question, it'll just blow us both out of the water.
No. He's asking. He's asking from the outside looking in. How do you see Tasmanian breweries comparing with the rest of the mainland?
Fucking badass. That's what I reckon.
We don't see a lot of it up here. I certainly don't. I order
a bit of stuff off Ben.
Fox Friday.
Yeah, Fox Friday. Oh yeah, that's the other thing. Two back to collabs. I'm gonna. Try and tee one of those up with them.
His new tap room is great.
It looks awesome. It looks awesome.
The city here. Yeah, it's ripper.
So I've drunk a lot of Will's beer, and Will's beer just always blows me away. My missus loves his beer as well.
My missus does too with the newer wild from
it. It's just amazing. Yeah. And it's been really nice. I mean, I was on the board of the IBA with Will, so I got to know him pretty well, and that's where we kind of met and spent some time together and figured we'll pretty kindred souls, not brothers, but and so we send out to each other beer every now and then, and to watch his beers and taste his beers over time, they're always good, but geez, they're so fucking good right now.
Yeah,
and really love them. So he's brewed most beers.
The other week I did that. I did a video with him where we tasted his three layers beers, and he sort of talked us through it. And mate, I just loved that. That was just so great to have him talk me through because my palate's not great, so I don't taste a lot of the stuff you guys taste. I could taste it, but I can't describe it. So to have him walk me through that, and for the other people that watched and listened to that, oh, that was just gold because he does know his shit.
Oh, mate, absolutely. And just what he does down there, and he's just always so fucking relaxed. Like he works so hard.
Yeah.
And always smiling and takes the best photos I've ever seen anyone take of beers and his environment down there.
Yeah.
I always think, to me, you know, anything you see that's from Tassie, you tend to get a bit excited about it. I do anyway. Just someone who appreciates food and coffee and all, you know, wine and all sorts of stuff. If I see something from Tasmania, I tend to get a bit excited about it because to me, it's just that thing where Tassie has that sort of special, almost like that thing in New Zealand, right? Small, everyone takes like really a lot of pride and everything they do is very special to them. You know, it's not just a business, it's their lifestyle. They're not just someone who's got a lot of money and was a bored home brewer and decided to start a business. You know, they live their life for it. So what they do tends to, in general, in turn, you turn out some really good products. And Tassie beers to me, I couldn't tell you bad Tassie beers I've had. I just don't, you know, man, I think in general, obviously there's a lot less breweries on Tassie than what there are on the mainland, but in general, I think you'd find your quality is probably up there.
Particularly at an average, right? I mean, everyone,
I'd say your quality in Tasmania tends to be, I think personally,
far better, you know.
I think they've, in the last sort of 3 or so years, I think it's just taken a next step. Yeah. There's a lot of people starting to get started and finding their way, as you do when you start your own brewery, finding their way, and then, you know, they've improved on the quality of the beer that they're putting out, and, you know, really paying attention to style and, you know, really listening to feedback. And the beer that's coming out now, for the most part, is sensational. Yeah.
Yeah, so it'd be a great place to be at the moment as far as beer goes, because, I can't wait to get down there. I want to go down there and spend a couple of weeks down there and just really look around properly and see what the place is all about, you know, because I've never been there. And like I say, for that reason, all the stuff that you see come out of there is fantastic. Like, even be able to go over to Bruny Island and stuff like that would be awesome for me, you know. It'd be almost on par with as exciting as going to American breweries or something like that, you know, because it's not a place that you can just go like straight, you know. We can't drive there or anything like that off the, you know what I mean, day trip or anything like that. So
nice.
Is that all you're after? That beauty, he pours his heart out for you.
Nice one, like, Gary. Nice.
Yeah, nice one. Yeah.
What do you want me to say? I appreciate what he's saying, and it is nice. I'm a man of few words sometimes.
Very rarely.
Well, hold on, let me answer that thing again. So let's just pretend that didn't happen. Ben, thank you for being vulnerable and so emotional about my home state that I love and truly believe in. And thank you for your valued feedback.
Actually, I like the other answer better.
Yeah, I like the other one. Also, you can't call me vulnerable. You're the one who said he needs a little booty cushion.
Hey.
I do believe it's a booty donut.
Booty donut, sorry. Yeah.
So last night in Preachers, I'm at the bar and the other – so we've got two co-owners of this company. And they're about the same age as me. We get on very well, and we're at the bar with one of them. And I'm saying to him, because I'm limping in because it's hurting, it's actually affecting the way I walk. And he goes in front of everybody, "Can I give you a butt massage?" And there's about 20 people in the. Last question for this round. So we've gone through about half, so we'll keep the other half for the next time. And what do we got here? We've got Jack Chauvel, I think it is his name. It's the year 2049, and there's a nuclear war that spans a decade and causes a hop shortage. In a world where there is little to no hops, oh, the horror, he says, what hop would you save from certain extinction through a series of underground hop cellars and brewers' networks? One hop.
Sabro.
Really?
Nah, fuck, I don't know.
Jesus Christ.
What are you? Fucking hell. You don't need that in seltzer, mate.
Ah. Oh, I don't know.
Are you going to say mosaic, are you, Dave?
I'm going to say mosaic.
He's, of course, Dave. Mosaic. I'll say
nothing if not predictable.
Yeah, true. Well, he's probably pretty right, really, isn't he? Because it's a very good all-round hop.
And I think it's one of my – well, not think, maybe I know. Central. It's my favourite hop on its own as well.
Yeah. Or Ruaka. Yeah, Ruaka.
Ruaka.
I'm going Ruaka.
Really?
Yeah.
Fuck off.
Really?
Popular hop in the world, mate.
Well, there's only about fucking 10 kilos to share across everybody.
Yeah, just real bad. Yeah.
What is it that you love about Ruaka hop?
Oh, I just love it. It's fucking sensational. It's just so, it's such a.
Oh, it's like, it'd be like you and Galaxy, Chris, just because that's where you're from.
Yeah, I was going to say, is it just because it's where you're bloody from?
No. Yeah, Tenapai's got it in it. It's just so fresh and it's just clean.
Well, boys, that's about an hour in here tonight, so we might cut it. It's about half the questions we've got through tonight. If anybody listening, you know, didn't get a chance to ask a question, wants to just send me one on a DM or whatever like that, we'll add it into the rest for the next episode, which we'll record sometime in January if we can all get together. And so that brings us to the drawing of the prizes tonight. And so everybody that asked a question went into the Lucky Door Prize, if you like, for the social media one, so we'll do that one for last. But the best overall question, as voted for by the pro and the protege, comes from Tim Shackle, and he was the one that asked about, you know, being a long-time brewer and how he could get better in terms of his bottling and why the beer didn't taste as good in the bottle as it did in the keg. Good. So, Tim, that was a good question, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I think that's something that every home brewer would get something out of. So that was great. I enjoyed that one.
And so for that, you get the ultimate Akasha prize pack, which is the mixed case of Akasha beers, a tote bag, a T-shirt, a hat, and the stubby holder. I'm not going to tell you what you call it. Well done, Tim Shackle, for that.
Hey.
Right. Well done. Second one was the funniest question, which was a mixed four-pack and an Akasha T-shirt. And we gave that one to Russell Paulin for his stupid question about Ben and his fucking pen.
Keep clicking that fucking pen, mate.
You got fucking double barrel next door.
I'll get them going on both ends.
I enjoyed that one. And the best technical question goes to Joel Slade, who had a bit of a chat there about, you know, hop freshness and how you can ensure that your hops stay fresh, and where the boys went into sort of talking about the types of hops you get in the brewery, the 5 kilo bags versus the 100 gram bags from your home brew shop. And Ben suggested maybe trying to get a kilo bag if you could. So again, a really, really great question, that one.
I love it a lot. No, it's good. I think it's and you can tell, yeah, they're obviously they're topics we're passionate about as well. So yeah, nice one.
And so it comes down to the lucky door or social media prize, which is the Akasha T-shirt and hat. And that goes to Jack Chauvel, who asked the question about what hop would you save if there was an apocalypse or whatever that went on. So
pretty good question. That was good.
So, boys, it's time for Christmas. Where are you guys going for Christmas? Are you heading away? Or are you going to be working? Or
Mate, I've taken 2 weeks off to do stuff to the house. So going to be,
when do you move into the new house?
Oh, we're here right now.
We're sitting in it.
Oh, right. Okay. Oh, I wasn't sure whether you'd taken possession or not. Oh, that's awesome.
We're all settled, mate. We've been in it for coming on it's 2 weeks today. There you go, Wednesday.
Let's be honest, you're just going to be setting up the brewery, aren't you?
I've already got the plasterers in, finishing the room off, mate. It's so your crowded Christmas will be painting, and I'm going to wet floor and stuff like that. I'm going to do it all properly in this one.
Nice.
But, that's going to be my Christmas.
Nice little garage brewery.
You're coming over for New Year's?
I'm over here for New Year's.
Going to set up the
camping in the front yard.
Yep.
Are you really?
Yep.
Yeah, fucking oath.
Camping in the front yard.
There'll be four of us camping in the front. I've got the two boys that will be coming with me. Daughters, we're doing our own thing. But
without traffic, it's probably a good 45-minute drive to Dave's from here. So,
okay.
A good day.
Nah, it'd only be 45.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That's what people say when they live far away. They always cut the time down, don't they?
But we'll be doing plenty of camping over the break, so, should be good. See some more of this beautiful country we live in.
Do you know what we should aim for in January for the next episode, though?
What's that?
You to be standing in the room here with us and we can do a
call. I would like to try and get there at some stage. January's a little bit busy for me in terms of family commitments, but maybe we try and get that. What's that?
Spend some of that Christmas bonus.
Christmas
bonus. You spent on the fucking plane, mate.
That was my bonus. Yeah, great. So I think two things we probably need to try and organise for next year is, one, yep, at some stage get in the same room and record one, the three of us in the same room.
Probably and more two, come to Tassie.
Work out a way we can brew a beer. I don't know how that all works, but let's just say we'll do it, okay?
I know a guy with a brewery, mate. We'll be right.
Excellent. Sounds good. So we probably need to start thinking about recipes. But, once things settle down, I reckon
We'll just do it over email. We'll let you know how it goes.
Yeah, thanks. You dickhead. All right, gents. Merry Christmas to you and yours. Hope you have a great break. Stay safe. Be well. And thanks to everybody this year who's contributed to the podcast. These episodes have been so much fun to make. People really love them, and I think people are getting some stuff out of them too, because it's some great information that you two clowns send across the airwaves. So thank you very much. I appreciate it. Be good.
Thanks, right, guys.
Cheers, buddy.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas. Have a good one. Be safe.
Thanks for tuning in to another Beer Healer interview. I really hope you guys enjoyed the episode as much as I did. If you want to follow along with more Beer Healer content, you can check out my Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram pages. Just search Beer Healer, or you can visit beerhealer.com. If you like the podcast, can you please help me spread the word by subscribing and rating it and sharing it with your beer-loving friends?